Let's turn to politics now. The standoff at the immigration processing or detention centre on Manus Island is over, according to the federal government. After a week of protests, armed guards entered the Delta and Oscar compounds and removed asylum seekers who'd been engaged in a mass hunger strike. As we just heard on AM, the Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton, says no one detained in offshore processing will ever be settled in Australia. I'm joined by our political editor, Alison Carabine. Peter Dutton has now spoken out about what has happened on Manus Island. He says the situation is calm. He also, in that interview, essentially sort of warned against reporting about the claims being made by asylum seekers, saying that is unhelpful to the situation.
Yeah, that's right, Hamish. This is something that the minister has had a swipe at previously in recent days in a statement that he released from his office, and that is what he regards as the utterly irresponsible claims being made by some refugee activists and then picked up and reported by organisations such as the ABC about certain allegations, for example, of food and water being denied on Manus Island by the authorities, and also some reports, unverified reports overnight, that when the PNG forces went into the compounds late yesterday to put an end to the protest, that some asylum seekers were beaten and dragged away. Peter Dutton saying this is utterly irresponsible and utterly irresponsible for the media to be reporting such claims. But when the government is so unforthcoming with any information, Hamish, it does put the media, including the ABC, in a very difficult position. We do take considerable efforts to try and verify the claims that are being made by refugee activists, some of whom do have a vested interest in this debate, but it's not possible when the government doesn't make it at all easy to work out exactly what is going on inside the detention centre.
Ali, as I recall last week when we were talking about these issues initially, the federal government was not entirely ruling out that things were taking place, but certainly downplaying that there was any form of protest going on initially, and that did turn out to be true. So in some circumstances, what the government has said, or you know, the government has been very reluctant to admit anything.
Yeah, that's right. And of course, the minister last week was denying that any hunger strike was taking place on Manus Island, and that turned out to not be the case. He conceded that there were asylum seekers inside the detention centre who were refusing food and water. So he had to correct his own record of what exactly is going on inside Manus Island. Now, the other point that Peter Dutton made, and he made it emphatically in the AM interview, is that no one who is on Manus Island, and indeed Nauru, will ever be settled in Australia. And that takes us to the question of where do these protests leave offshore processing, which really are the running sore of Australia's asylum seeker policy. And the current protest may be over, but the underlying problem is still there. In the Manus Detention Centre alone, there are 1,350 men. These latest troubles began because they don't want to be resettled in Papua New Guinea. The first 50 will be moved out of the detention centre later this week. Now, the authorities would have to be bracing for more trouble. Now, the government has stopped the boats. We know that it's done that, but it has not solved the issue of offshore processing. There's never been any evidence that processing people in a third country like PNG or Nauru has had any effect on stopping the flow of boats. It's the turnback policy that's accomplished that, not necessarily offshore processing. But politically, Hamish, the policy remains, I think, a winner for the government. The more the detainees protest, the more trenchant the government seems to become in its hardline approach to transferees. No person who has protested, no person who is being processed on Manus or Nauru will ever be settled in Australia. That's you cannot miss that message from the government this morning.
On other matters, the government's still trying to move on from the situation that unfolded last week in relation to Medicare. Joe Hockey's gone on this on the front foot, making this claim about people potentially living until they're 150. Therefore, we need to really look very closely at the way that the health budget operates. He does have a point, regardless of whether you you think that that comment was relevant or wise, he does have a point about the ageing population and the need to recalibrate.
Yes, he is. And this really started with his predecessor, as Treasurer, Peter Costello, who, I guess over a decade ago, released the first intergenerational report that looked at the whole issue of Australia's ageing population. And it's been picked up by the current Treasurer, Joe Hockey. He will release the next iteration of intergenerational report next month, and it should kick along this debate about just how much we are prepared to pay for all the services that we've become so accustomed to and that we expect from our government. And Joe Hockey was making the reasonable point that there is probably a child born somewhere in the world today, or, you know, currently who's just been born, who will live to be 150. Now, the Labor Party seized on this comment from Joe Hockey as the Treasurer's Sarah Palin moment, but it was no such thing. As we've already heard on Breakfast, Joe Hockey is supported by medical researchers who are not discounting the possibility of such longevity, mainly due to the breakthrough in medical research. And so we're going to hear a lot more about the ageing of the population in the next few months or so.
The other thing that we sort of talked a bit about yesterday with Nick Xenophon was higher education funding policy. Is the government, talking to him, it sounded as though there was some room to negotiate, that there might be some interest in reaching a sort of mutual point of agreement there. Is there, from your perspective, does it look as though the government is inching closer towards a deal?
Well, you do get that sense, Hamish, and certainly from listening to your interview with Nick Xenophon yesterday. And let's not forget, the government only needs another two votes in the Senate to push through the legislation which it failed to pass late last year, overhauling university education funding in this country. And the government does, to an extent, have the vice chancellors on side, which is very important in prosecuting the case. Most VCs would like the notion of increasing student tuition fees to meet the 20% funding cut that the government wants to push through. Now, the negotiations are continuing with the Senate crossbenchers, some of whom do seem to have come back from their summer break with a more of an open mind when it comes to reforming higher education funding. Now, the first round of university offers for this year in a number of states and jurisdictions come out tomorrow. So students will be anxiously awaiting to see which university, which tertiary institution they will be attend this year. There is an argument that the government, if indeed it gets the numbers to pass the legislation, delays its start-up date just to give the kids who are entering university this year a bit more time to consider whether or not they want to sign up for a 3 or 4 year degree when they could end up paying a lot more money for it in the outer years.
Alison Carabine, our political editor, thank you very much.
Thanks, Hamish.
You're listening to RN Summer Breakfast.